So this is where we would introduce our speaker captain, which is Sonia. I don't know, Sonia, are you online with us?
Yeah, hi.
Are you prepared to introduce Kelly?
I'm not, but I can go ahead and say a word or two for Kelly.
Fantastic.
All right. Sorry, Kelly, I was not prepared. But welcome to the Valley Group speaker meeting, everybody. Really happy to have you. Welcome to the newcomers. We hope that you hear a message that will resonate with you, and I'm sure you will, because Kelly is speaking tonight. She is a real treat. She is heavily involved. She was doing, she was the secretary for the women's group, the women's group, the Tuesday night women's group. And she's very involved in the AA community, is just a wonderful person to know, and has a lot of wisdom to share with us. So I'm really excited to hear her story tonight. And with that, we'll go ahead and introduce Kelly from Isolia.
Hi, my name is Kelly, and I'm an alcoholic. Hello, everyone. Okay, super nervous about this. So my mind tells me all these ways I could have gotten out of it this morning. My computer broke, all these crazy things I was going to say. And it's just, this is where my brain goes. My brain just tries to dodge, hide, weave, get out of uncomfortable situations. Because when Bill asked me to do this, it was in January or December. And I thought, oh, April, that's so far away. I'll be so zen by then. You know, I can probably teach a yoga class and meditation and everything. But that's not quite how it works. I grew up in a family that was a long line of alcoholics. I think I have a distant cousin that was not an alcoholic. I don't know him, but we all talk about it. I was surrounded by alcoholism. They were functioning alcoholics. So my mind of an alcoholic was, kind of like someone that was down and out and under a bridge. Even though I could see, I just thought everyone did that. I thought everyone's parents came home at night and drank and fought and, you know, did all that fun stuff. And I found alcohol in high school, loved it. All of a sudden, I didn't have that hole in me, that self-consciousness, that how do I look? Oh my gosh, everyone hates me. I don't fit in. If I were only prettier, you know, skinnier, all these things. And alcohol made me forget all that stuff. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I discovered, someone gave me pills in high school, pain pills. I loved that from the first time too. And I was off and running. I happened to have my dad was a dentist, so I was writing prescriptions, fraudulently, got away with that for years, stealing pills, drinking, you know, all that, went to college, flunked out my first year. I was much more interested in going to a party and drinking than anything to do with school. And at 19, I had my first stint in a rehab. I can't even remember it, really. I took nothing serious. I just thought, oh, God, just get this over with. I need to get off these pills. That's it. Didn't really think drinking was that much of an issue. Got out of the rehab, started drinking again. I was like 19, 20, and I thought, I'm not even of legal age. There's no way I can be an alcoholic. Continued to drink, got myself back into a college, graduated. And then that was like my first big goal I did. And I thought, okay, now I'm here. I've graduated. Now I'm going to feel better. I've achieved this. And it was still me. It was still me in the same spot. Still me drinking. Still me with every insecurity and fear I ever had. And it didn't get better. I continued to drink. All the while doing pain pills too. I started dating my husband when I was 29. So I was working, I was living in the Bay Area, started dating him. And I remember vividly us dating and him saying, you know, why don't we not drink? Because we see if we get along. And I thought, is he crazy? Why don't we not drink? So my solution to that was to drink a six pack before I went to his house. So I would down some beer on the way over, hide it, dump it in a dippy dumpster somewhere, and go to his house, mince in my mouth, and we continued to date and got married. And then I thought, okay, well, this will be it. You know, I was 30, wanted to have a family, working. I wanted to have my kids because I was already in my 30s at this point. I knew I wanted to have kids. And this crazy part of my brain, I thought, each kid will get me sober. This one will. And with this kid, I'll stay sober. This is a good reason to stop drinking. This one, I had really assigned them duties before they were even born. And of course, that didn't work. That did not work. I was drinking and driving with them, with their friends, in the car, hiding liquor all over. I remember my kids finding beer cans in the car and saying, what are all these Coors Light cans? And so, oh, I picked them up on the side of the road. I mean, it's crazy. Of course I was not picking them up. They knew that. And I was working. I was bringing in an income. I thought I was there for my family. I was physically there. And it was getting sober, realizing how much I was not there. I was in my room, isolating, watching reruns of NCIS, and drinking beer. And that's what I was doing. I lived this complete double life. I had no friends. I had people I worked with. But I would never go out with anyone because I'd have to drink before I went anywhere. And I wouldn't want people to see how much I drank. So that just wasn't an option to go out with people. So I was working for a good 20 years. And this was going on for 20 years of my marriage. Having my kids, my kids are when I got sober 2 years ago, my sober date is 3/30/18. Just had my 2 year birthday. And what got me there was getting called in at work. And one of the most humbling experiences and so embarrassing and shameful. And my boss was sitting next to me saying, Kelly would never do this. Kelly is just, you know, great. She would never do something like that. And me having to look at her and say, I did. And she started crying. I felt so shameful. And I didn't see any way out of it. I thought I knew I was in this cycle, but I honestly didn't see any way out of it. I did not think I could live without alcohol. I thought this is just the way it was going to be for me. And I was told I needed to go into a 30-day program to keep my license. So I did this, and I just did it because I was told to. I didn't want to. I went in there, and I was miserable. The physical withdrawals were awful. I was fuzzy in the head. I couldn't sleep at all. I got out after 30 days, and I think I lasted about 12 hours. And I was drinking, and soon led me to other things. And I was drug tested through this program, and I got popped immediately. But I didn't think I would, because, you know, I would drink a bunch of water before I went in, and they would say they were diluted. And I said, well, I don't know why. And, you know, lie, everything, all that stuff. And they just said, you have to go back in for 60 days. And the second time I went in, I had a feeling of peace about me when I went in. Because the first time I was, I wanted to be sober, but I didn't want it. I wanted to want it. It just was not there. I just thought it was just pure torture. The second time I went in, I wanted to be sober, but I didn't think I could. I did not think this was going to work for me. But I went in, I did the 60 days. And for me, it felt good to come out and have 60 days. That was more time I ever thought I could have. I would be in that program and see someone take a 30-day chip and just be in awe, as I am today, because that was so difficult for me. I could not go an hour without using something. I would set my alarm clock an hour before I had to get up so I could use before I got up. And I had just, my mind couldn't comprehend anything else. So the people that had years, I just went, oh, that's just crazy. You know, that's just lying, crazy talk. But the people that had 30 days, I was just like, wow, how did they do it? And I'm still amazed by that, just because for me, being in there was really hard. And then when I got home, it was even harder. I was like, I have to make dinner sober, right? It was like, how does one do this? I have to go to my kids' basketball game sober. It was torture. I couldn't stand any of it. So there was a lot of dinners and still is. I wasn't working. You know, I knew my way wasn't working. I had been shown through this rehab there was a different way. I had to go to these meetings. So I thought, I know it's not working what I'm doing. I need to throw myself in 100% to what other people are doing. And that's when I finally, I went to the meetings because I had to get these meetings. I had to go through this program I'm in. So I had to go to meetings. I had to get drug tested. And that's something that I'm very grateful for. And I continue to do that because it kept me accountable. And if there was any way I could lie and use, I would have lied and used and drank. That was just so ingrained in my head. That was just always my go-to, that I didn't see anything else. So I thought I would give this a chance. I never thought it would work for me. I went to the meetings. I thought, it's great, it works for other people, but this cult is not going to work for me. That was my thinking. And someone said, pray for willingness. So I just started praying for willingness. Now, I didn't know who I was praying to. It could have been, you know, the Easter Bunny. But I would just start praying, please, God, make me willing. Please make me willing. Something started happening. I started feeling hopeful. I started seeing people really and listening to them. I couldn't hear them at the beginning because I was so nervous I'd be called on, that I was so focused in my mind of me, what am I going to say, me, that I couldn't get the message, really. I would get bits and pieces sometimes, but I wasn't hearing other things. So, you know, I start going to these meetings, and then, you know, I was hearing the meetings, you know, you need to get a sponsor, and I thought, oh, gosh, really? And then, so I get the sponsor. And I get a sponsor that I heard one day in a meeting. It sounded like on the phone she was yelling to another sponsor. She's talking pretty harshly. And I thought, well, I need this sponsor because this sponsor will keep me in line. This sponsor will, I knew this was the sponsor I needed. And thank gosh she said yes to me. And then going and doing what the sponsor told me to do, be of service. So I started making coffee at meetings. And that got me to the meetings, and it got me there early, because I can't tell you at the beginning how many meetings I would drive up to. I would sit in the parking lot and drive home. I would even drive by them. It was almost like me going to the gym. It was like, okay, I'm still doing it, and I just ditch and fail. So that being accountable to the meetings and then secretarying the meeting and getting involved in a home group meeting, that I heard all these people that had what I want. I would see people in these meetings that had this like inner peace and this serenity that I wanted so bad. I didn't feel any of that. I just felt like this nothing, just nothing, just like no joy, no happiness, absolutely nothing, just like a hole inside of me. And I thought, well, this is the way I'm going to live. And I'm glad that wasn't the way it was. Because when I got my sponsor, she got me into the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was by working the steps that I started finding relief. Going through these steps, and at times when I would just be praying for willingness to work a step, you know, willingness to do the next thing, and somehow it would happen. And then when I would do the meditation, and sometimes my meditation is just, I just say this mantra to myself, in with God's will as I'm breathing in, and then I exhale out with my will. And I'll just say that over and over in the morning in my mind as I'm doing like deep breathing. And that seems to calm my thoughts, calm my head, and make me feel more connected to my higher power. And, you know, I had this image at 2 years that in my head, because I always have these expectations and my expectation, you know, at 2 years was I was going to be so serene and, you know, just so one with God, and, you know, teaching meditation to you all. And, it's such a journey, having the opportunity to do this and working the steps that I feel really grateful to be on this journey. And at times, especially with that God's will, I take my will right back. And I find that I'm driving my will, and it's not going very well. And sometimes that can go on for a while. But I find that having a schedule and sticking to that schedule that started me off in that rehab, that I just thought, this is grueling, but it's very helpful, especially with all that's going on right now. My job is considered essential, so at least I have a schedule of working 5 days a week, because left to my own devices at home, I can't imagine being in my house just with me in my head. So working through the steps, step one came pretty, I think that was one of my easier ones, because I knew I was powerless over alcohol. I knew that. I had tried for a decade at least, to stop drinking. I was definitely in my disease for a good 30 years, and I had tried, I would say, for 10 years to stop. And that never got, I mean, at night I would say it, but I never got past noon the next day without something, you know, when I was really trying hard. And the step two came to believe a power greater than myself was difficult for me. I knew there was something out there, but I certainly wasn't deserving of it. And he certainly had, higher power had, you know, I didn't deserve anything from a higher power, and I didn't think a higher power would listen to me. Until I started seeing these small things that I thought were small, that were huge, like me having 30 days sober. Because that was definitely a higher power, because I couldn't do that on my own. So when I would look at it that way, or that was pointed out to me that way, I should say, I definitely saw a higher power working in my life. So I was believing in that. I was believing in a higher power. On step three, turning my will and my life over the care of a higher power, as I understood it, that is the mantra. That mantra is telling you that I do, because that is a daily thing. And sometimes I think I'm doing it, and I'm not. I definitely like to take my will back a lot, and I believe that's something that I think that's from what I hear, people at all stages of their recovery, their years, months, whatever they have. That is something. I know that I struggle with, so that's one of mine. I'm step four. This step was amazing to me, because it was like the biggest step over. And I was, I should say, dodging, hiding, didn't want to do that. I was definitely not willing. Prayed for the willingness once again, prayed for the willingness, got into it, and was amazed by some of my patterns I had. Seeing these patterns in my life from a young child, seeing where these patterns started, seeing these character defects I had. Lying was a one I started at a very young age, and I can't even tell you why I lied and why I would lie. I mean, you would ask me if I saw a movie. Did you see this movie, Kelly? Sure, I did. Oh, yeah, it was great. I never saw the movie. I never saw it. Why am I lying? I just go, what am I saying? Does it even matter? I would lie about everything. Hated confrontation. I would do all these things to avoid confrontation. I mean, one of my craziest ones was I was getting out of nursing school, and I had been living with this guy for 5 years, but I didn't want to hurt his feelings because I really didn't even like him. So I told him I was joining the Peace Corps. So I had to go down and join the Peace Corps, and it was like a six-month process. So I did that, and if there wasn't the bombing in South Africa, I would have been in the Peace Corps. But these are some of the things I did. Just all these things, instead of just looking him in the eye and saying, this isn't working for me, because that didn't ever even cross my mind. That's how crazy it was. It was, what lie can I tell, and what will be the most believable, and then how can I follow up with it so it's not really a lie, now I'm doing it. Through step four, I saw a lot of my behaviors of, if you would have asked me about my caretaking, and I thought I was a very caretaking person, and I was very thoughtful, and I would do a lot of things expecting a payback. Not saying that, but in my mind expecting it. Expecting, well, I did this. Well, how ungrateful they are. Or, you know, these little things in my mind that I wanted something for what I was doing without actually even realizing it until looking back on it. And then somehow at the time I was the victim that they didn't give me what I wanted. You know, if I wasn't surrounded by alcoholics, I would have been an alcoholic, and how did I get this unlucky? And those things really started changing through that step four, and seeing this and having my eyes open on I was part of my life. I wasn't just a buoy out there in the ocean just bobbing along. I was a master manipulator, a master liar, and I had created a lot of these situations. And I got everyone on my lying train at times. And I got a total high out of lying. I just thought it was great to pull one over on someone. And then going into step five and saying this to my sponsor and doing this one afternoon, it was a beautiful spring day, doing this with her, and I felt I was so nervous to do this, and I was just churning inside, and I walked out of her house, and I thought I was like flying. I felt so light on my feet. I had the best feeling since I had been sober, walking out of that house, and I just loved it. So, of course, there I sat for a while. I loved this feeling, and I was kind of done. I was done, and I didn't get on to six and seven, and I was just so happy with that. And then you know, you need getting my own will and starting working on five and six. To me, five and six were also amazing to see humility. Humility is amazing to me, and how I need to be humbled. And it's not being humiliated, and that's what I took it as. It's being humble and realizing how into myself and my ego really drove me a lot. And I don't know, I can just tell you that five and six, and through the prayers that my sponsor and I said with those, and you know, and just asking for these character defects to be removed it was really great. It was great at the time until I pull them back. And I'm working on step eight and nine. And what I've realized with this is the step eight and making my amends letters and some of these character defects that I am not willing to give up right now. I was saying one of them to my sponsor, and she says, well, you know, if you say this and you do this amends letter, you know, Kelly, it means you're not supposed to do that behavior again. And I was like, what? I mean, these are like my comfort ones. These are my little standbys that I can't imagine living without. Especially in this relationship I have sometimes, you know, that I have with this person. And it's really having to change a lot of things. And so I'm praying once again for the willingness to be willing to not repeat these character defects and to let them go and to learn a different way to live. And that's what, you know, to me, this journey, this sober journey is about, is really learning a whole different way to live. And if I didn't have AA, I never would have been given this opportunity that now I see as grateful, where I never thought it was grateful, but I was never grateful for anything. Are you kidding me? I walked in here grateful for nothing. I was like, how did this happen to me? And why? People have overreacted. Oh my goodness, what's going on? Everyone lives this way. And to be able to see this whole different side of life, and to have this, to strive for this power, this relationship with a higher power is really a journey that, that there is no destination. It's just a continuous journey with this. Because I always want to get to the end of something. If I get to this point, then I'm going to feel better. Then it's all going to be good. And the people I have met in these rooms have been amazing. And that's really the only people I hang out with besides my immediate family. And I'm just, at this time, very, very grateful. And that's all I have to say. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everyone, for listening. That's my time.